The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Who are the top-ranked college football coaches in 2026, and how many does Auburn play? It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, and you know the man who's with me, but I'm going to give him a little task because we have afternoon baseball, yet the TV is just not working right
my
now.
Fault.
And so, no, turn the mic off. We're not there yet. We're not there quite yet. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this July 9th. Another very, very warm day. I think we can get past the title of warm. It is a hot day in Auburn, Alabama, but it just feels like it matches the overall standard. And if that's the biggest complaint, then we'll go about that as we do. But a really fun show we have set up for you here this afternoon. Our two wonderful guests joining us, one in each hour. We have Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us at 2:30. We have Chris Gordy, of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us at 3:30, and a whole lot of sports talk in between those as well. We'll talk with Brad Law again about SEC Media Days and kind of just the overall expectations that he wants to see Auburn have. There's such a mindset of who won Media Days, who lost Media Days, and I feel like that gets talked about too much, almost as if that's the only talking point. But what's the good information that he wants to hear from the Auburn Tigers if there is information that needs to be stated? We'll also talk again, as we mentioned it, about the top-ranked coaches in college football in 2026, according to ESPN, and how many of them Auburn will play throughout this season, and what is listed as an easy year for the Auburn Tigers. We'll talk Auburn baseball in there as well, and basketball. So we got all three major sports on tap for you here this afternoon. As I mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin. I got my man Trip Upton here with me in the studio, as you already knew that. And so officially, happy Thursday. Welcome in, as we are working on getting our afternoon baseball worked.
Yeah, there was nothing on the unnamed TV provider app that we have on our TV in here. So I am switching over to the ESPN apps because I can say that we are ESPN. that is a loud sponsorship. But no, happy Thursday. It's been one of the days of the year, if I could say that, the days of the summer. So I'm glad to be here talking with you on ESPN 106.7. Got to go on Doug's show earlier today. So
yeah.
I've already been on there today, technically. But
it's hard just being a professional, man.
I know, it really is.
The phone's ringing all the time, having to take calls. They just want to hear your voice, get your expertise. And
hey, no, I love it. I appreciate Doug for having me on. It was a good conversation, and hopefully if we got some listeners in the River region or wherever joining us, I mean, we always will have everybody either on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU, or the Radio Alabama app. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, phone lines are going to be open in between our phone calls and leading up to them, 334-321-1390. Text box is always open at 334-784-1OTL.
And we get the afternoon started. As we mentioned in the intro, the top-ranked college football coaches in 2026. And this is an article from – oh, we didn't get it, did we? Man, that's unfortunate. Well – we'll continue working our way. We can put on the World Series of Poker. That's what we need
Sure.
here on this Thursday. That's the epitome of talking season right there. Is on ESPN, you have the World Series of Poker. Not hating on it, but
no.
Just goes to show what the afternoons look like on ESPN. But we do rank the top college football coaches in 2026, or I guess react to the rankings that ESPN released, and we'll dive into how many of those teams Auburn will see, how many of those coaches Auburn will see as the year progresses, and we'll work from 10 to 1, because I feel like that's just the right way of going about it, and you don't have to go very far until you get fired up if you're an Auburn fan, or if you're an Alabama fan for that perspective, because Kalen DeBoer is listed as tied for 10th. I don't know why you say the top 10 and you still have a tie in there, and I don't know how you officially rank a tie for the 10th best head coach in college football, but Kalen DeBoer does enter year three with the Crimson Tide as the 10th ranked head coach in college football. 57-17, the record speaks for itself. 20-8, though, at Alabama. Last year's ranking, it says, again, number 7, and he is a 20-6 career winner over teams with against teams with numbers next to their name, against ranked opponents, but he is... you feel like that's where the frustration comes in, because it's when you face the unranked teams, or you face the ones that you are heavily favored against. There's some frustrations on that side of things. But Kalen DeBoer, the Alabama Crimson Tide head coach, comes in at number 10 on this list, according to ESPN, for the 10th best coach in college football for the 2026 season.
I mean, I think that makes sense in terms of looking at kind of where certain teams are, where the resumes of certain coaches, looking at the team of Alabama making the college football playoff last season, being a guy that has gotten them, and then the year before that they were at the doorstep and had an argument to get in over SMU. But I think that the frustration is valid for Alabama fans looking at the, okay, well then they'll go beat Georgia and Athens, or they'll go to beat who the teams they're supposed to beat, Tennessee, and then it's, oh, actually we're going to lose to unranked Vanderbilt. We're going to lose to Oklahoma at home. And that's just not up to standard. I mean, that's not any program standard in terms of if you're a top five team losing to unranked teams at home or to Vanderbilt on the road at the number one team. But I think Kalen DeBoer is still a top quality head coach. At least he should be on paper. This will be an interesting year to see kind of as the Saban recruits are finally starting to leave the program. How are Kalen DeBoer's recruits going? That's going to be interesting to see. But I think that he is set up to continue that status. Alabama believes in him with that extension for sure. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues.
Tied for number 10. And this is one that I guess doesn't make sense. It's one of those you start naming, you know, the top 5, top 10 NBA players of all time. And it's like, yeah, this is a top 10 player. And it's like, okay. Then you start naming names and it's like, oh gosh, I quickly just rattled off 8. Are you sure that he still fits in that top 10? But you feel like just off of the progression that's happened, especially over the last 2 years, tied with Kalen DeBoer as the 10th best coach in 2026, according to the ESPN article, is Mario Cristobal from Miami. A guy who just led his team to 13 wins and the program's first national championship appearance since 2002. He's led the Hurricanes to back-to-back 10-win seasons, and he was 7-1 against AP-ranked opponents in the top 25 last season. Had the most ranked wins in college football and tied the most in a season in program history. Mario Cristobal also comes in at number 10. And just comparing those two names tied at number 10, you feel like there may be a little bit of a fraud in this list.
Is it the same fraud that you're thinking of? Because I'm going to sit here and say, I understand what Mario Cristobal just did at this season at Miami, going to a national championship. I can't really say like, oh, you went to a national championship, you're not good. But Mario Cristobal has the exact same problem that Kalen DeBoer has, but tenfold. Every single year, when he was at Oregon, this was apparent. And last season, he's able to stave it off a little bit at Miami, but it happened at Miami, too, when he had Cam Ward, and everyone thought they had the best offense in the country, where Miami would go, and they would take care of the games they were supposed to. Maybe they win a game they're not supposed to. And then they go to Virginia Tech and almost lose. Virginia Tech came there, it was a Hail Mary that got overturned. They go to Georgia Tech and lose to a team that made the Birmingham Bowl. They go to Syracuse and get beat in a shootout by a Syracuse program that people like the upside of, but I don't know if that's a program with serious staying power. I mean, at Oregon, this was apparent. And it's the dumbest ways possible, too. It's the, we're not going to take a knee. We're going to run the ball and fumble the football and losing games like that. They've lost games, plural, like that under Mario Cristobal. Georgia Tech in 2023, I believe. And as well as he lost a game like that at Oregon, I believe, to Stanford or something like that. But or Washington State, one of the two of those programs. But that was the that's the constant criticism I have of Mario Cristobal. And yeah, it's hard for me to say take out the national championship appearance season, and he is not a top 15, maybe not even a top 20 head coach. It's hard to do that when he has that. But I mean, if I was a program hiring today, and I had the choice between Mario Cristobal and Kalen DeBoer, I'm probably taking Kalen DeBoer over Mario Cristobal. Oh yeah. I mean, I know that Cristobal can coach can recruit better than DeBoer can. I understand the trenches aspect, but I like what DeBoer's offense has been able to give him, what he's been able to produce with quarterbacks and win at multiple levels, winning in the D2 level, turning Fresno State around, getting Washington to a national championship game. Mario Cristobal has just kind of coasted at Oregon, a program with unlimited resources if you want them from Phil Knight, and then immediately never gets to the college football playoff at Oregon, goes to Miami and has to be the last team in and goes on a miracle run to go to the national championship. And they competed with Indiana. They beat good teams, Ole Miss and Ohio State. But I think at the end of the day, I think that Kalen DeBoer, if you put him with Miami's resources or Oregon's resources, he could get you over the hump to win a national championship.
I wasn't expecting a Trip Mario Cristobal rant here this afternoon I understand everything you're saying, and by no means am I saying that I'm putting all my trust in Cristobal, but it's almost like if you reach the number one overall ranking, you win the national championship, I think by rule you should start as number one until you get taken down from that list.
Sure.
So it's not looking at the history, it's looking at 2026, because I don't disagree with anything that you were stating, but it is weird just when you compare those two head coaches, if you are looking at last year into this year, and although the expectations are probably the same in those two programs of competing and getting into not only the college football playoff, but getting into the semis, getting into the quarters, and doing whatever you need to do, and competing for a national championship trophy. But you feel like, again, just if you're talking just strictly last year into this year, having a coach that made the national championship tied with Kalen DeBoer, who
he's made maybe not Alabama, but he's made a national championship.
Sure.
I know this in a 4-team playoff versus a 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that might be fire up Auburn fans compared to, like, I'm not saying anything in terms of Alabama and Kalen DeBoer. I think that's a great mix? Time will tell. I think jury's still out on that. But in terms of an in-game coach and a guy that I trust to make the adjustment and make the decision, I think that they're very similar. In terms of they overlook opponents sometimes. Yeah, they 100% both are very guilty of that. Look at Vanderbilt. Look at Miami last season. But I think that the in-game adjustments that Kalen DeBoer made are slightly better. Like, you look at how they lose to Oklahoma at home and then go on the road in the playoff and beat them. I don't think Mario Cristobal's Miami Hurricane team could have done that, make an adjustment like that. But again, time will tell. I think that I understand what you're saying with the national runner-up. They should be high. Sure, I don't disagree with that. But I'm, in my personal opinion, I'm probably not as high on Mario Cristobal.
Working our way. I guess we got to kind of move now. We can, again, we'll carry this into the next segment as well. But number nine, a bit of a surprise as well. And maybe not the name, or maybe, I guess, not the logo, but the name. A little bit of a surprise. This is Kyle Whittingham, ranked the ninth best coach in college football. And I guess this has more turned into, you have your computer closed, I have mine open. So almost reading this to you and letting you react, which
yes,
perfectly fine with how it's rolling along. But Kyle Whittingham, the Michigan, sounds weird to say those two names
yeah,
together. But Kyle Whittingham, the head coach at Michigan, is the ninth ranked coach in 2026.
I'm really high on Whittingham. I really loved him at Utah with what he was able to build there. Yes, Urban Meyer really got the the wheels moving with that program before jumping over to Florida in the early 2000s. But Kyle Whittingham took the torch and exceeded it, making multiple New Year's Six games, always being a threat to win the Pac-12. And even as they made the move to the Big 12, I know they weren't really a top contender day one, but they were always on everyone's radar. They turned Rice-Eccles into one of the toughest places to play in the country in Salt Lake City. But my question is, can he do all of that at a bigger program and a different geographical footprint? And instead of being the guy at Utah, he is the next guy at Michigan, who already has national championship winning head coaches like Jim Harbaugh, looking at Lloyd Carr back in the day. But I do like Whittingham. I think that his defenses are very aggressive, and I definitely am fine with him being at this spot. I'm just worried the game may have passed him by a little bit. I hope not. I don't think it has. I think he's got a lot of juice left in the tank, but I do like him at this area.
It just sounds so weird saying Kyle Whittingham in Michigan.
I know.
It'll still take a couple of years to get that figured out. And again, a weird situation as well, especially after Utah received all of the the grants from the third party banking and all
the private
of that,
equity,
the private stuff that came in. And then Whittingham was like, oh, okay, so I can get even more money for my program. No, it's okay. I'm still going to head out to Michigan. I don't know. Feels a little bit weird for a team that's still projected to finish second, if not third at the worst in the Big 12 this year.
Well, I think that I don't know this for certain because I try to stay a little bit plugged into the Big 12 and what's going on just to know. I've always enjoyed that, but from what I understand, I think that there were reports where he was kind of forced out, being like, hey, we don't know how long you have. Maybe it's time to go to the coach in waiting, who they have there, Shelley, I believe, the defensive coordinator. And that's why Whittingham had retired originally and said, okay, I'm going to retire. I'm going to let him take over. And then Michigan called. He goes, hey, you know what? I'm actually not retired.
Yeah.
I think there was some
– the voluntold, the pat on the back, the guidance
yes,
to the door.
Yes, exactly.
Which
–
I mean, again, would make sense, and I'm sure that was talked about, but for Michigan needing anybody, if he is just the 2 or 3 year guy, kind of not the stepping stone in terms of getting back to the top, but just the stepping stone of giving you time to figure out those next pieces, feels like it's a pretty solid fit. Just still feels a little bit weird. Getting two more real quickly, because these are two teams in the SEC and ones that no way will fire anybody else up. Mike Elko for Texas A&M, listed as the 8th best coach in college football. I don't mind this.
I don't mind. I love Mike Elko. I think that what he was doing at Duke was already really impressive. Kind of building that program that Manny Diaz has continued to grow. Another guy that you could make an argument of a top 15 coach. But I think that once he was able to get all the resources that you have at Texas A&M, turning them from, Texas 8-4, you know, you're always going to be 8-4 as an Aggie. Then being, okay, we are going to be a serious threat every year to make the college football playoff, made a college football playoff, lost to Miami in a very weird game. But I think I like that, and I think he, you know, after this year, if Texas A&M does what they're supposed to do, I know they're reloading a lot in the defense, he could be higher.
Lane Kiffin at number 7.
Sure.
I guess I don't mind it. The name obviously plays a lot of weight. LSU plays a lot of weight. I'll tell you what, in this list, he may have the most pressure of every single name in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that if you were to, it would make a lot, for a guy with 0 playoff wins, and I know that, would he have probably won some of those games as the head coach of Ole Miss if he had stayed through the playoff in a perfect, quote-unquote perfect world for him? Sure. I would understand that. I think that they would have 100% beaten Tulane and given Georgia another run for their money like they did in the regular season. But at the same time, he didn't. So that's a more of a regular season dominance, and they've been really good in the regular season, just haven't put it together in the postseason, though. So I'm fine with that. Maybe, would I have him over Elko? I don't know, but I think that you kind of have to for what they're paying him and what he's been able to produce in terms of talent, numbers, maybe just not playoff wins.
We're breaking down ESPN's article about the top college football coaches of the 2026 season. We have hit 10 through 7. We will take our first break here this afternoon, continue working our way down this list before Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joins us at 2:30. We're just off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. He entered the room the same way every day. A sweater, a pair of sneakers, a gentle smile. Fred Rogers believed television could teach kindness. Not through loud voices, but quiet ones. For more than 30 years, he reminded children they were valued, that feelings mattered. And perhaps his greatest lesson was the simplest. You have made this day a special day just by being you. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Halfway, or just about halfway through this list here, breaking down, No, we could have our conversation about EA college football if we really wanted to. I know that that's a very hot topic in the world of sports right now. Pay, don't play, baby.
Oh, no, I don't.
That's their mentality.
Why someone would spend $100 to max out their player on an offline game mode won't make much sense to me personally.
But there's people that'll do it, and so that's they did it. And hopefully the public voice will be heard loud enough. But no, breaking down ESPN's top 10, basically top 11 coaches in college football for the 2026 season. Real quickly, Kalen DeBoer and Mario Cristobal were tied at 10th. You have Kyle Whittingham at Michigan as the number 9 head coach, Mike Elko at Texas A&M as number 8, and Lane Kiffin at number 7. We will have a little bit more time because I guess we won't talk too much about some of the names in the top 5. But Steve Sarkisian, Texas, number 6.
Sure.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. You could make the argument for me that I would listen to be placed a little bit higher. That being said, I don't feel strongly enough one way or the other to move him from that spot.
I mean, what, one playoff or two playoff wins, I guess, because they beat the Titans of a Clemson team that limped into the playoffs on a 53-yard field goal and an Arizona State team that should not have had a first-round bye and got taken to the brink by Cam Scadabo by himself.
Yeah.
But I like Sarkisian. I think he's one of the best play callers in the game right now offensively, and he's gotten results. He's gotten wins. He's recruited talent to Texas and turned them from when are they going to realize their potential to realizing their potential. He just has to win some hardware first.
Number 5. And this is one that you say his name and you're like, yeah, no, that's a top 3 coach. I mean, it might be a top 2 coach in college football. And then this is where you start naming some of the other names. And it's like, ooh, okay, where does he fall into this list? Dan Lanning at Oregon, ranked as the number 5, the 5th ranked head coach going into the 2026 season, 48-8 as a head coach. All of those games at Oregon. This is since 2022. He is tied with Ohio State for the second highest winning percentage other than Georgia during that time. But in the past 3 seasons, the Ducks are 1-5 against teams that ended up in the national title game. They are 37-0 against everybody else.
Yeah, another kind of like Lane Kiffin, kind of like Mario Cristobal, kind of like Kalen DeBoer, another regular season warrior, as I'd like to probably react to that. But a good coach, recruits probably pound for pound better than anybody not named Kirby Smart in the country, because dude can go into Southern Alabama, dude can go into upstate New York, dude can go into Texas, and all of the elite recruits are going to see that Oregon O. And granted,
they're also seeing Phil Knight's O's next to some commas.
Literally, exactly. And that does help you a lot, but I mean, he is turning compared to, again, I talked about Cristobal earlier, I think that Lanning is an upgrade over Cristobal, but neither have the real postseason trophy hardware. But Lanning, always in rumors for a big, like a Texas or Alabama job, but I think he's turned Oregon into a consistent power. It's just, when can he get over the hump? Kind of like Sarkisian.
It's yeah. You're almost wishing that the college football playoff could just be listed as the regular season. If that was the case, then Oregon would be in a great spot. He's won 10 or more games in all four seasons since taking over at Oregon from 2015 to 2021. Oregon had 2 10-win seasons. We quickly make our way into the top five, where Marcus Freeman sits at number 4. Shout out Mr. Brandon Gurley, who may be listening right now. But Marcus Freeman, 43-12, all of those games at Notre Dame, has 5 bowl wins since 2022. Wasn't able to add to that tally last year for some reason.
No, you know, if only there was some like postseason competition that they could have played, even if they don't make the college football playoff, play some sort of exhibition, you know, someone like a good team, like BYU, another good team that didn't make the college football playoff that they could have played. I just can't think of any off the top of my head that would be worthy of the institution such as Notre Dame. But no, Marcus Freeman, fantastic coach, took over for Brian Kelly, a guy that had turned Notre Dame into a playoff contender and made them into a title contender. I think in his limited appearances as a head coach has been phenomenal. So I'm fine with that. I think maybe a little lower just based on he hasn't won anything truly yet in terms of other than going to a national championship game, which I guess that does winning something because you had to win multiple New Year's Six bowl games. But I really am high on Marcus Freeman. I'm very glad for Notre Dame that he stayed and did not go to the NFL.
3-2-1 now for me are relatively, I guess, interchangeable. I know you can think of two of the three very easily. One's not a newcomer, but I made the comment of, if you win the national championship, I think you deserve to stay at that spot. Kurt Cignetti as the number one.
I'm fine. I mean, you win a national title anywhere, that's number one. You do it at Indiana.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jacob could tell you as the voice of the Locked On Indiana Hoosiers podcast, that's really impressive.
Number two, Kirby Smart.
Could also make the argument for number one, in my opinion. Multiple-time national championship winner. Cool with that.
Ryan Day as number three.
I guess that makes sense.
Relatively,
I kind of forgot about Ryan Day.
Relatively interchangeable by the year.
Yeah.
Feels like, and a lot based off of what Indiana does this year with Josh Hoover at the helm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Ryan Day finally getting the Michigan monkey off his back really allowed him to get into these conversations and winning a national title. For some reason, I thought you were about to throw me the meanest curveball in Dabo Sweeney, and just because he's a multi-time national championship winner. But I'm also cool with that at number three for sure.
Yeah, I think 1, 2, and 3 can be interchangeable. I'd be willing to hear a conversation for any of them. We've had a lot of SEC Media Day talks over this past week as we are a week and a half away from getting there. Let's bring in Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, see what he's excited about here coming up in just a couple of weeks.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending your Thursday afternoon here with us on the airwaves. And we welcome in a guy who hasn't been here in a couple of weeks, but excited to bring him back on the airwaves. Mr. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us, and hopefully Brad enjoying the dog days of summer as we work our way towards a true football season right around the corner.
Yeah, guys, we're doing well. We're, 58 days away from kickoff now? Seems like we were at 70, you know, just a day or so ago. Now we're under 60. It's just we're at the point now where we're about to start zooming downhill toward the start of the season. So we like that.
Yeah, it feels like you're almost at the completion of list season and Mount Rushmore season, and you're getting SEC Media Days, which I don't know about for you, but we at least in the media consider that to be like the unofficial start of kickoff, because you get to obviously have SEC Media Days, and those are the big storylines that carry you throughout August and into September when you're actually able to really start breaking down some of the games. And that's been a lot of what this week has been, because, same thing that you just mentioned. We were in the boat of, holy cow, on Monday, That is 2 weeks from SEC Media Days, where we will be down in Tampa giving all of the coverage right here on ESPN 106.7. But I know that there's so many different storylines that want to come out of SEC Media Days. There's so many talks about the winners, so many talks about the losers, and I think all of that is overhyped. But what are some of the things that you are hoping to hear or hoping to see from Alex Golish and this squad when they make their way to Tampa here in just a couple of weeks?
I'm really interested, given the experience of Media Days. I've been to a lot of Media Days, been watching Media Days, and been at a lot of them. And it's always fun for me to notice the questions that coaches are asked. And I think a lot of people are going to nationally ask Coach Golish about stuff that he's already answered 50-100 times, right? Like, they're going to ask him about the transition from South Florida to Auburn and the American Conference from the SEC, as if he hasn't coached in the SEC as a top flight offensive coordinator.
Sure.
Had offenses that led the nation in offense. But I'm always curious to watch the questions that are posed to first year head coaches and particularly to Auburn coaches. But I think we're going to hear a lot about the leadership and the culture of this team. I'm interested to see if we're further down that road in July than we were in March. It's tough to establish culture fully in a first year, but it's a process, and he knows that. So how far along are they in that? I'm interested to hear more about Stanton Ramil and his progression. Mm-hmm. Is he fully 100%, and will he be, and is he at, like, can we expect 100% from Stanton as one of the projected starters on the offensive line? Defensively, who are the top two corners going into the fall? Who are the top pass rushers for this team going into fall camp? And what are the battles that are going to, I mean, I could go on and on, and I'll let you get another question in here in just a second. But, what are the position battles that are kind of top of his mind, as will at that point be just a couple of weeks from the first practices of fall camp?
Brad, Alex Golish will not be alone. He will have some players joining him. As of last time I checked, Auburn is yet to announce those players that will be joining Coach Golish. If you got to be the person to book the flights and say, hey, who is going to be joining Coach down there, who are some names that you would be interested in hearing from?
Yeah, it's going to be hard. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find three other players that fit the bill of representing your school and playing important positions, that combination, that balance of the two. Byron Brown and Cole Best,
mm-hmm.
They just, one is the unquestioned leader of the offense, the face of the offense, and the quarterback. The other plays the most unappreciated keystone position and is a clone of Alex Golish. So
right.
He's going to say exactly the things you want to represent your program. And then if you need a defensive guy, you have an All-American over there in Xavier Atkins, who embodies the spirit of competitiveness and, smart, aggressive play from a DJ Durkin defense. So, if you take anyone other than those three, I think you got to have a compelling case to do it. I would go Brown, Best, and Atkins.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. Zooming out from just Auburn to looking at the SEC, there's going to be a lot of new faces, and especially in the coaching ranks, looking over at Florida, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Arkansas. I wouldn't say Lane Kiffin is really new, but he'll be wearing different colors. Who are some other people and other coaches that you want to be able to hear from during their time down in Tampa?
Clark Lee post Diego Pavia and with a new extension in place at Vanderbilt, what's their expectation?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are they expecting to compete at the same level that they did before their really unique quarterback was there? All the new coaches that you mentioned, like Josh Heupel, they've averaged 9 wins a year since he was there. They haven't quite done at Tennessee offensively what they did when Alex Golish was the OC. They've not replicated that success yet, but, they've been able to win games. Pete Golding in his first, media days as the head coach, and it's fully his team with a revamped roster. Interested to hear from him. the pressure, I think, that's on Kalen DeBoer after back-to-back four loss seasons at Alabama. That's an interesting dynamic, too, is, you know, how much are they lauding him and how much are they putting pressure on him after back-to-back four loss seasons there. And I'll tell you guys, Greg Sankey may be the most compelling speech of any of them,
yeah,
because of all the off-the-field stuff that's happening and the changing dynamics of college sports. People who are a little bit older may remember the movie Inception, where the walls would pick up and go 3D and change directions like a Rubik's Cube. And I think we're kind of at that place in college athletics. And what will the commissioner choose to address, and how will he address what he chooses to address? Both will be important.
Yeah, it feels like you're at a very unique spot. I don't feel like, maybe other than the paycheck and the title, I don't think there's too many people that would wish to be in his shoes, especially coming from the spring meetings down in Destin, where there were hoping to be a lot of answers on the 9-team SEC slate and what the overall college football playoff expansion looked like, but you walked away with more questions than answers, and so now you look towards media days to hopefully get some of those answers. We have Brad Law here on the Auburn Sport, or of the Auburn Sports Network, here with us on ESPN 106.7. Brad, we're hitting all three major sports this afternoon, so figure we would do the same with you here this afternoon, and although there's no big-time basketball news in terms of Auburn, we know that everybody has arrived on campus. We know that summer practice is underway. And we got to dive into an article yesterday that was talking about Stephen Pearl getting back to the basics and how he wants to prioritize. And right now he is prioritizing who can stop the ball. One-on-one, we're going mano-a-mano. And although you now have a lot more size down in the paint, you now have the rim protection that you enjoyed having over the years past. Obviously, that is not what you want to have to rely on. You're not going to allow blow-bys because of the foul trouble and how good and skilled these point guards are at getting around defenders, using finesse, but then also drawing the fouls. What do you want to see, I guess, just in terms of the defense, the tenacity, and what you're hoping for, getting back to that Stephen Pearl mindset on defense?
I don't know if the question cut off. I may have missed the very last part of it, but
Brad, I think we lost.
Brad, do we still have you, sir?
Oh, goodness.
Well, we may have lost the man of the Auburn Sports Network.
Maybe the basketball just fired him up.
Oh, there we go.
I heard the disconnect.
Well, Brad, if you're listening, happy to have you call back here in just a moment. But yeah. I think what he said was really important, again, about SEC Media Days and bringing guys that bring such value to your program, not only as a face, but as the leader, right? We talked so much about culture. I know you had that question when you were on the Max Roundtable earlier this afternoon, just talking about what is the culture like? What is that level versus what we've seen in the past? And having to not bring in so many guys that don't know that system, that don't know how the head coach decides to go about his business, right? You feel like it makes it at least a little bit easier when diving into everything and getting to the phone lines. We believe, Mr. Brad Law, do we have you back?
Yep, I'm back. I don't know what happened, but I'm sure it was my fault.
No, you are all good. We'll take full blame for it on our end. But no, diving into, again, just continuing that question about Stephen Pearl wanting the on-ball defense to be a major focus this season. And although you have the rim protection, not wanting to rely on that, what does that mean getting back to the defensive tenacity that Stephen Pearl has been known for?
Well, I think it's an attitude. And, guys, I also think it's a function of replacing some of the guys on the roster with taller, longer, wider wingspans, because you got to have the mentality, but it also helps if you can, if you switch a little better, or if you don't have to take one extra step to close out on a shooter, or if you can cut those gaps down. Basketball offensively right now is so much about spacing, getting guys open in the corner, drive and dish, and things like that. So you've got to be able to switch. You got to be able to recover defensively. You got to have the vertical rim protection, but you also got to have horizontal coverage. So if you can shrink those gaps, if you can decrease the margin for error and make a guy on the other team, if you make him alter his pass by 4 inches to the right or to the left, well, maybe now he can't get his timing just right for his shot. Maybe you get another half a second to close out, mm-hmm. and now he doesn't have the open shot that he had before. You can get really, really technical when you talk about just ways to improve defensive efficiency, and it can get into geometry and angles and all those things that are absolutely a part of playing defense in this system. I've been to, you watch practice a lot over the years when Steven was kind of handling everything defensively, and guys aren't just chasing the ball around or chasing their man around. There's a reason why they land with their feet in a place that they land them in. There's a reason that they position their body and their hands a certain way. Sometimes the hand is up in the face, sometimes it's around the waist. Everything's intentional. And so you got to have the mindset, of course, but an extra wingspan, a little bit of height, a little bit of length, a little bit of quickness affects the other team's offensive efficiency, and that's what you're trying to do at the highest level.
Yeah, and then again, I mean, worst case scenario, again, the mano-a-mano, the keeping the ball in front of you, doesn't work out. You now have the luxury of rim protection, and again, that works its way into so many different caveats where the other guys don't have to close out as hard and make it to where the three-point is now a big-time vulnerability, which we saw a little bit because you had to have more of that gang rebounding, a little bit more of the interior defense that wasn't there 1-5. You now feel like you have that when it's a pretty good problem to have when George Kimball or Tahad Pettiford step on the floor and your shortest guy is 6'1 or 6'2.
Yeah, and it helps with your defensive rebounding percentages too when you have the backside of the rim the front side of rim protection is just that. You're blocking shots and maybe you make a guy take a different shot than he wants to take. The backside of it is defensive rebounding. Auburn allowed a good number of offensive rebounds last year. You can start transition better with defensive rebounds and block shots and things like that. And maybe you steal 4 to 6 points a game in transition offense because of what your defense is doing at the rim. And maybe you steal another 4 to 6 points a game in transition offense from what those perimeter guys are doing on the defensive end.
I mean, that right there can easily turn into not only 4 or 6 points that you're taking away, you get out in transition. Yeah. That makes it 8, 12, 16 types of points that are ultimately the big-time swing, and you go back and look at how many games that Auburn lost by just a possession or two, even just last year, how much of a difference that can make.
That's a great point. You can have a 20-point swing in a game because you've taken away 10 points on the other side by altering shots or forcing turnovers, and then you could get 3 to 5 easy buckets a ball game, 10 points the other way. 20 points makes a big difference in every game, it seems like, certainly when you get into conference play. So it matters, and that is why they're so intentional about it. It's why they focus on their defense so much.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. One question for you, Brad, before we get you out of here. Looking at baseball with the MLB draft coming soon, and Auburn not only has players on the roster that have declared for the draft, they also have some high school prospects and commitments that will be undergoing the draft process. What do Auburn fans need to be looking out for with the draft and some players that could hear their name called and move up to the next level?
Yeah, well, you got a couple of draft-eligible sophomores or redshirt freshmen in Chris Rembert and Brandon McCrane, your two middle infielders. The prevailing thought is that, Rembert will start a professional career, and we're not so sure about McCrane, but certainly the raw talent's absolutely there. Eric Guevara, third-year guy, they think he's one of the best defensive third basemen available in the draft. Alex Petrovic finally broke through with a huge season, redshirt sophomore right-hander, but his third year out of high school. So, you love the potential. He's got a real smooth delivery and, really good stuff. So, those are the guys that you're looking at most likely being taken in the draft. From a high school perspective, the dream is that maybe Coleman Borthwick, who's projected as a first-round guy, 6'6", 260, would be a true freshman coming off of his high school career, corner infielder and pitcher, who's touched 100 with his velocity. So just a dynamite talent, but that's why he's projected first round. So you're probably not getting him to campus, but it'll be interesting to see if he happens to fall into the second round. Is there a chance? There's always a chance nowadays with the world world that we're in college athletics and what these guys can do, and the value of the teaching they get at the college level.
Definitely,
now,
yeah.
compared to the minor league level. So, those are kind of the biggest names of the draft that we'll be watching when it gets underway Saturday.
That it's a wild concept to think that a guy that's touching 100 that would be an easy first round draft pick, you would imagine, but you can still sit there and say, but now, based off the world we live in, for better or for worse, there is a chance that he wears an Auburn jersey next year. And it's a good problem to have in that terms and that side of things, especially again with the MLB proposal of the draft changes. It makes it to where the college baseball game is just going to get better and better. And for guys like us, I see no complaints whatsoever in seeing college baseball being at the top of its game. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. We appreciate your time. Again, I know that this is the epitome of dog days of the summer. This is a lot of just the open-ended questions, but we love your insight, love the passion that you have for everything you discuss when it comes to the Auburn Tigers. Let everybody know what you got going on your side of things before we get going back with the Auburn Sports Network here real soon.
Yeah, we'll get going before we know it. I guess about 7 weeks or so, 7-8 weeks away from the first Tiger Talk. Until then, we're talking Auburn every day, not with the Auburn Sports Network, but with Zach Blackerby on Village Vice. Check that out at thebarnauburn.com. We record multiple shows with different hosts. We post those up on the YouTube channel every single day and go live on Fridays. And would appreciate folks checking that out at The Barn Auburn on YouTube.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time. Looking forward to talking with you again next Thursday, really hitting a deep dive into SEC Media Days. I would imagine by then we'll have the names announced and everything. So look forward to talking to you again here coming up real soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks very much. Always a pleasure. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here joining us, as he does every single Thursday at 2:30. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one quickly right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line as the Thunder has started. It must be 2-4 on the Line on ESPN 106.7 because out of nowhere, really. I didn't expect to see. I mean, again, don't use this as your trusted weatherman, but I wasn't really expecting to see.
I saw it get darker outside, and I obviously at this time of the year, you're not going to get like the sun going down super early. So, okay, maybe there's some weather, but oh no, there is.
You can almost on the unnamed, might be able to hear that through the microphone.
On the unnamed weather app, there will be isolated thunderstorms in Auburn, but there's not supposed to be any precipitation till tomorrow. Oh, it's supposed to rain all weekend.
How does that work?
Oh, well, it's maybe some at 10.
There's isolated thunderstorms, but no precipitation?
That's what it's saying. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at
again,
it wrong.
Good thing I'm not your weatherman, because I don't really know how that works.
I am not a meteorologist.
All I see is it's dark and
windy. The air pressure.
It's going to rain.
You can feel
it. I can feel it in my left knee after I've had it surgically replaced 3 times. I can feel it.
I know. You can feel, if you walk outside, you can feel that it's about to rain.
You know how I know that it's about to rain? I walk outside and I get wet. That's that's how I know it
is. Put it on
rain.
A t-shirt.
Isn't there's like the stupid things at the beach where it's like, this rock is now your weatherman. If it's wet, it's raining. If it's dry, it's sunny.
Yeah.
If you touch it and it's hot outside. If there's snow on it, it's snowing. If it's floating, if it's flying back and forth, it's windy outside.
And it's if like, it's gone, there's a tornado or hurricane.
Exactly. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. That's about how my weather system works.
Yeah. I mean, that is, yeah.
Those branches are going crazy.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're hunkered down either safe in your car or safe in your house. And you can listen in hour number two right here with us on the line. We'll brave out the storm together. How does that sound?
Man, sounds good. Actually, I'm going to go home. You got hour number two.
All right.
I'm going to make sure that I get it home. No, we'll be back after this here talking hour number two. Looking at Auburn's non-conference basketball schedule being released, hitting all three major sports here this afternoon. We'll talk about the comparisons of last year's schedule versus this year's schedule. And Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, all of that coming up in hour number two.
production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Auburn basketball has their non-conference schedule just about confirmed, and we're going to compare them from difficulties from last year.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Having a good time here in the studio, staying dry because, my goodness, the storm outside is quickly brewing here this afternoon. We have the romantic lights on where the overhead light is off and it's just the buttons of the... golly.
Yeah.
you can hear that through our microphones right now. That's wild. But yeah, we just have our on-air lights on, and so it was fine earlier. Now it's dark in here. It's a little spooky. But appreciate everybody for being here with us as we get underway in hour number two. Had a really fun time in hour number one. Got to dive into the top-ranked coaches in college football for the 2026 season. An article written on ESPN talking about those coaches and how some we have no strong opinions about, some we have very strong opinions about. We were not expecting a Mario Cristobal rant from Trip Upton here this afternoon, but that's what we got. You never know what you're going to get here on any dog days of the summer talk. And hit 1, 2, and 3 of Kurt Cignetti, Kirby Smart, and Ryan Day, and how you feel like just about in every year those guys could just be in a rotation, especially, again, I guess it was more the Ryan Day, Kirby Smart, Dan Lanning, but with Kirby Smart, or with Kurt Cignetti, you feel like now it's worked its way a little bit more into the trifold. So we got to have a conversation on that. We also got Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, our weekly guest at 2:30, talked all things kind of pre-SEC media days, just some overall generic topics that he expects to see, that he wants to hear from, and then who he would pick if he was Alex Golish, and the three names for that would go along with him for SEC media days. Also got some thoughts on some baseball in the MLB draft coming up this weekend, some names that have the Auburn logo either already next to them or that would have the Auburn logo next to them if they were to attend college, that expect to hear their names relatively early here on the weekend. But he said it best, in today's day and age of college athletics, you never know. There's always a chance that those players return, and so it's a good thing in terms of what that means for Auburn athletics. And a lot of that will carry into hour number two as we hit, again, all three major sports here this afternoon. But if you missed any of hour number one, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com.
Hour number two, we talked to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, talk about some storylines heading into SEC Media Days at Tampa. I believe he'll be down there with us, so excited to get with him. But first, we're going to look at some Auburn non-conference basketball, look at kind of what the schedule is looking like this fall for the Tigers, and then looking at some previous ones and seeing that this one might be a little bit more manageable than other ones have been in the past. But if you want to join in on the conversation, phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of the show, 334-321-1390, or you can text in the text box, which is always open, at 334-784-1685.
Let me start hour number two with Auburn basketball, because the non-conference schedule is all but finalized, but I believe yesterday it was wrapped up and fully complete, and so we're now able to at least dive into the teams and where they play. I know that some of the dates are still being kind of worked out, at least the last time that I looked at it, but man, another gauntlet. That being said, it feels more manageable, I will say, this season, and I don't think that that was taken without a little bit of strategy.
I mean, there are some tough games in this one, but I think it's going to be easier overall, 100%. Looking at some of these games to run through the schedule for you, they start out the season on November 4th against Southeast Louisiana. The Lions from Louisiana, the name of the town they're from is escaping me at the moment, but I knew it. So then they go play Appalachian State, a team that Auburn lost to on the road a couple years ago. I believe was that the 23 season that happened, Christian? They lost in Boone, North Carolina, to App State.
Was that 23?
I think it was the 23-24 year, I believe. So this time it'll be in Neville Arena with the jungle behind them.
December 3rd, 23. App State won 69-64. Nice.
Then they play Arizona on the 13th in Neville Arena. That game is going to be exciting. A team that was a Final Four caliber team, a number one seed. They will come to Neville Arena to take on Stephen Pearl with the jungle at their back after the Tigers went to Tucson earlier, I guess, last year. Then the Players Era 8 in Las Vegas the week of Thanksgiving. West Virginia, the confirmed game for that one. The Mountaineers looking to get back to prominence. And the winner of that game, they'll either take on the Kansas Jayhawks. Bill Self has turned them into one of the best teams in the Big 12.
Are you still surprised that he's there after all of those conversations about retiring and health, or just taking another job if he wanted to step away? And you feel like every single year, and even after their loss in the tournament, he made remarks of like, yeah, it was
fun. Puts it all in perspective.
Yeah. I had a good time. It really brings everything full circle. And it was like, okay, yep, that was it. Congratulations on the career. And then 3 days later, he was like, no, I didn't mean any of that like that. I'm coming back. And it was like, all right, are you surprised that he's still there?
I mean, I don't think he would leave for another job. I think it would be more of a, I'm going to step away for health reasons. Obviously, there's been, I know he's had cardiac scares and, rumors of some as well. I want Bill Self to coach in Lawrence, Kansas for as long as he wants to, because he has continued that program tradition, won national championships. So I'm not very surprised, but anyway, looking back at the Players Era 8, they will either play that Kansas team or a Josh Pazner-led UNLV team, the Running Rebs, trying to get back to prominence in the Mountain West. So that'll be a really good game there. They also will play a third game to be determined. It'll either be a winner's game or for the championship or a loser's bracket game. Then the Tigers take on Lipscomb, coming from Nashville, Tennessee, before taking a trip, as the calendar turns to December, to Auburn with a Lake, as it's called, Clemson. The Clemson Tigers, Brad Barnwell, taking on Stephen Pearl in the ACC-SEC Challenge. That'll be a big one. Eastern Kentucky, the Colonels, that'll be in Neville Arena, followed by an in-state matchup with Alabama State. The Hornets coming off an NCAA tournament appearance.
Yeah.
I know that there were some conversations because of maybe some betting and some gambling. Again, you feel like it's infecting every single sport that has harmed the Hornets. They'll take on Middle Tennessee in Huntsville, a city that you'll be well acquainted with by then because of high school football season with the Warriors.
I'll be able to tell you everything you need to know about Huntsville with Lee Scott making our way up there multiple times this year.
Yes, the Blue Raiders from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, make the trek down to the Rocket City. Then probably the second biggest non-tournament, non-conference game. I know that's a lot of clarification, but the Wisconsin Badgers in Nashville, Tennessee, the Badgers looking to get back to the tournament after being upset by High Point on a last-second layup. Then they take on Lehigh on December 22nd, home of C.J. McCollum that beat the Duke Blue Devils, a 15-2 matchup back in the day. And
Mike Yastrzemski, baby.
He was from Lehigh?
He just hit a grand slam.
Oh, sweet. Thank you. Braves finally hitting. What? No. I was told the Braves could never hit and that they were going to be awful because they won four games in the month of June.
Was that me that said that, or was that just all of Braves?
I think that was both of us saying that, actually. Yeah, fair. And then finally, they'll wrap up their non-conference slate as with the end of the 2025 or 2026 part of the year with the Morgan State Grizzly Bears. I think it is a type of bear. I don't know if it's Grizzly Bears or Bears. My FCS Sporkle brain had to think about that for a split second. But looking at that schedule, Christian, just on paper, what are your immediate reactions to it?
Morgan State is the are they just the Bears? They are. Benny the Bear. The Morgan State Bears and Lady Bears.
Where is Morgan State? Is it in Tennessee?
You're the
Baltimore, Maryland. Wikipedia knew it. Interesting. They were the first interracial American basketball game played south of the Mason-Dixon line in 1952.
There you go.
You just got a free history lesson.
You just got a free answer on tomorrow night's Jeopardy so you can impress the lady when you're watching dinner. There you go.
You watch a lot of Jeopardy?
No.
Oh, lame.
Every once in a while, but
that is my
I will
family's
not say
thing.
That I couldn't tell you what time it's on.
Fair.
It's more
it's
of like
7:30 Eastern time.
No. 7:30 Eastern time, 6:30 Central time.
Oh, dude, me and my family will legitimately all sit around, and if we're home, buddy, Jeopardy's going on that TV, and it's effectively me and my dad just kind of throwing knowledge. But
because you said you're like a giant geographical total nerd,
dude,
when it comes to geography.
Well,
right?
That and I actually in like lower or elementary school. I get in trouble because we'd be doing stuff in class and I would be reading the history book for fun.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was like kindergarten.
What is the biggest piece of useless knowledge that you have with history?
Oh, that's
besides Morgan State was the first.
wars are a big one. I watched a lot of those. I could tell you.
I feel like I'm on the Lee Scott Sports Network right now. This was something – you know Rhett, don't you?
Of course I know Rhett.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Krum.
Making sure that you had that connection as well. I have always said if I ever needed one person in my life to help me win a trivia game, it would be Rhett.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yes. I think that he
– and just overall knowledge and the amount of, A, knowledge that was dropped on air, but the road trips that we had of – he would read a sign and it would be like, oh, yeah – that place was the first place that did this, this, and this. But back in the 70s, when you were allowed to do this, this is what happened here. And there was legitimately no response. Shout out Mr. Chrome. Love you, buddy.
We have a like Western art museum in Cartersville, the Booth Western Art Museum, which was like me and my friend that also is kind of interested in like Western history. We legitimately went on like last year just to the museum one day, and all of our other friends were like, why would you not want to do legitimately anything else? But no, we went to the lake. I'm trying to think of some like random historical nuggets. I mean, when I mentioned, I had a video, I mentioned it a couple of days ago about the longest free fall jumps, in the history of that. Pro wrestling. I know a lot of pro wrestling history, just stuff like that. But anyway, to bring it back to Auburn basketball, trying to have a historic turnaround.
You didn't answer the question.
Oh my! The piece of history.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go with the Conch Republic. When Key West in I think the 80s separated from the Union. They seceded from the Union, and there was like a month standoff between Key West and the United States government.
When was this?
This was in like the 1980s, I believe.
Okay.
I'm gonna Conch Republic in Key West. Yeah,
somebody text into the text box 334-784-1685 to confirm or deny.
Yes.
Fact check. But continue.
Yes. So they left. The Conch Republic. They left the. It was a micronation, and it was declared in 1982. And it's been like a tourism booster. It's not like a real country, but really, I think it was because of all of the government was like taking the rights because of like the drug trafficking and immigration from Cuba. Like the government was way too involved with Key West, and the mayor was like, you guys got to get out, we're going to secede. And they had like close off the bridge for like 2 weeks. It was insane.
Wow. There you go.
our female viewership just dropped 90%. Sorry.
Hey, but again, now you have the right answer for Jeopardy tonight.
Yeah.
Whenever you need it. The storm is doing something to us, as is my 2 hours of sleep that I am trying to work through here this afternoon. Not necessarily having a lot of success doing that, but no, we do. I don't think there's a way to... We'll take a break and we'll come back and bridge last year's season versus this year's season, ranking what the teams that they have on their schedule this year looked like in terms of KenPom and other statistics that we can use. And Tripp will continue to not give anybody else insights unless we ask him nicely, and then he maybe will. But do with that segment what you will here. We'll be back as we're just off and running here in hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on this Thursday afternoon. Happy FIFA World Cup quarterfinals, as that is now 20 minutes underway. France and Morocco, is that right?
Yes,
there we
Morocco.
Go. Look at that.
Trying to make it to back-to-back semifinals, first African team to do so.
More trivia that I'm going to have to ask you that I don't know. Why is Morocco M-A-R as their abbreviation? Because I don't know a lot, but I know Morocco is not spelled M-A-R. I guess I should say that more confident. I should look that up before I say that more confident. Okay, no, it is M-O-R.
It's probably because certain, like, maybe that they weren't on the abbreviation train in terms of what, like, MCO, I believe, is Micronesia.
Here we go. Morocco is abbreviated as M-A-R in international sports like the World Cup and the Olympics because the code is derived from Merrick, which is French for the name of the country.
Oh, there you go. It's like how, because like Turkey is.
Or would that be Merrick or Maroc, I guess?
I'd have to look it up. I took 8 years of French. I should know that.
Did you really?
Well, I took French in seventh, or eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th, 11th, 12th, and then I took a semester in college.
You say you're on the line?
I thought we said not to do accents or anything. It would be.
No, No, I'll catch you.
We'll do it off air.
Good call.
Yeah. MCO is Monaco, so.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I didn't even notice anything wrong with that. I like how certain teams will abbreviate. Like, obviously, abbreviations are needed in sports lexicon, but I do like how certain ones will be like how – I'm trying to think of some good ones. Like, so the abbreviations that say funny stuff.
There is nothing better than the Pirates and the Phillies.
The poop game?
The poop game.
What I was thinking, but I didn't want to –
fantastic.
But that would be too cliche. I was trying to pull, like, a niche one. But
for those that have not – no, yeah. The Pirates logo, they have scored 0 runs, and then 0 runs have scored the Phillies. P-O-O-P.
All right. Remember they did, like, they changed what the graphic looked like, and they did a full, like, segment on the whatever the affiliate is for the Phillies, and it was like a in memoriam.
Oh, yeah.
That's so awesome.
It was pretty sweet. Yeah. But they called it, like, the last poop game.
The last poop game. But speaking of some games that Auburn will be playing that hopefully aren't poop.
You've done better.
I know, I'm trying.
Looking at, again, we're diving into...
We've been just talking for 20 minutes. We have not gotten to what we initially started on.
We got the initial schedule that Auburn basketball released for the season. But while we do have a few moments, wanted to talk about what those teams were able to do last year. And I have KenPom pulled up and just the overall rankings. And I know that looking at the preseason rankings, it doesn't necessarily line up because, our favorite thing in the world is preseason rankings because thankfully they're concreted in. Nothing is going to change.
Yes.
And thankfully the experts know everything about every single team and there will not be a single thing changed. That being said, KenPom is a relatively trusted source when it comes to basketball because there are no human emotions that are tied to it. You go and you look at just about every single number that you could possibly find, and that would be the number that you will see. I don't believe there was one for Southeast Louisiana.
They're D1. Oh yeah, the Lions.
Let's see where they're at right here.
Yeah, I don't think they had a good team last year. if I had to say so, out of the Southland Conference, I want to say.
I didn't see them earlier. Southeastern Louisiana. Yeah, Southeastern. Apologies. They finished 286th in KenPom, right by Northeastern, East Texas A&M, Mercyhurst, and South Dakota. And so you would like to mark that as a win for the Tigers. App State.
Hey, I mean, Bethune-Cookman right literally, there. Yeah, literally.
App State, again, that November 9th game, App State finished 19-13 last year. They were 195th in KenPom. They didn't have the worst defense ever, but their offense kind of fit that mold. 232nd ranked offense in college basketball last year. It won't take too long to find Arizona. You just look at the very top and you go down one team. Arizona finished 36-3 last year, only behind Michigan, who finished 37-3. But thankfully, Auburn does not play Michigan this year, which we didn't really get to. But the fact that when we discussed it a little bit, but almost like the Bryce Underwood and how everybody is – or Bryce Underwood is staying at Michigan, even though Dusty May is at the Mavericks now, basically everybody has announced their intent to stay, and they will be staying at Michigan.
Well, I think that also is because of that they named the coach the interim.
Sure.
So that the new rules do not apply and that they would not be able to transfer until they hire someone new.
Yeah. Again, yeah, we
partially
talked about
why,
that.
But
The loophole that may be created on that side of things. West Virginia didn't have the worst year. They finished 21-14, finished 55th in KenPom, and you mentioned it. It's a West Virginia program that when you think about the 2000s, the 2010s, yeah. You think about just some of the big upsets, right? And maybe not necessarily a team that's going to be there every single year, but it's one of those places, yeah, you don't want to go play West Virginia in late February, early March.
They're going
to
just full court press the entire game. That was just the Bob Huggins MO, and they just, that's what they did, and they played well.
Looks like we have an Mbappe penalty kick at the 26-minute mark.
And
although they've been discussing it for 5 minutes, thank God the clock is still running. Otherwise, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I mean, gosh,
65-79 in all competitions on the career penalty kick. I don't know what that percentage that is, but it's pretty high.
Hurry up and kick before the music kicks us out of here.
Well, maybe we can talk about...
stop looking at... I know Chris Gordy has some big-time thoughts on... On the World Cup. Here we go. He's finally lined up. Since I made the comment about the clock running, a minute and a half has gone by.
Goodness. They keep just showing the coach, showing the referee.
We're having like a standoff.
Those are cool France jerseys, I will say. Like I know they're not.
Bro, what are we doing?
They're wasting time, maybe? I mean, where are they playing this game? Is it Boston?
Yeah.
Okay. Or Boston Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, yes, not Gillette. It is Boston Stadium.
Know. Yeah. All right, here we go. Oh, no, he's the...
Oh, my gosh.
This is...
Anyway. We are 2 minutes into everybody sitting there and having a friendly conversation.
We're just
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joins us next. Oh.
No, he saved it. All that for nothing.
Pathetic.
Mm.
Why did it look like he did absolutely nothing? I mean...
He tried to fake him in the goalie. That goalie's insane, though. I don't know why you're trying to fake one of the best goalies in the world.
Pathetic. No golden boot for you, Mbappe. Still 0-0, 28 minutes in. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He joins us, hopefully, to save hour number two.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending some time here as the rain continues to fall, at least on our side of town. And we welcome in a man who's with us every single Thursday at 3:30. He is Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. My friend, before we dive into SEC Media Days, I know better than to ask you any questions about the Olympics. How do you feel on the World Cup? Are you a hater? Are you kind of neutral, or do you love it?
It's fine. I got aboard the Team USA bandwagon.
Sure.
I was hoping that, you know, having home field advantage was going to help carry them. And then they played frankly worse offense on Monday night than any Hugh Freeze Auburn offense that I saw.
We've been doing so well.
It is what it is. But yeah, I mean, look. Argentina, did they cheat to beat Egypt? Probably. It all is whatever. To be frankly honest, I'd rather watch an SEC spring game again as opposed to a World Cup game, but that's just me.
You bring up the Hugh Freeze offense. I saw a post earlier this morning about how they showed every single highlight, every single one of them, and I believe they listed a highlight as like getting 4 yards or more in like a 6-minute clip, if even that, from Auburn and Kentucky, which was pretty impressive, and most of those were punts.
I'll tell you guys this, Chris Lowe put out his top 10 quarterback rankings this week, and I was a little surprised he had Byron Brown at 8. I think that's a little low. I would probably have him up a couple spots higher than that because of the skins he has on the wall, but I said, let me go back and look at last year's list just to kind of see where people were ranking SEC quarterbacks this week a year ago. And sure enough, right there at number 9 was Jackson Arnold, 9th best quarterback in the SEC going into last season. And I think he probably finished 15th or 16th. So, it's funny because this time of year, it just proves we never know what we're talking about when it comes to rankings.
No, everybody has their own ranking system. Everybody's right, and thankfully everything is concreted in. There will not be any sort of change, but I guess on that topic, just if Byron Brown is a middle-of-the-pack quarterback in the SEC this year for the Auburn Tigers, what does that look like in the season? How much of the overall record, and it may be a dumb question because obviously the quarterback has the biggest influence at all, but if Byron Brown is just a middle-of-the-pack quarterback in the SEC, which is better than what Auburn has had in the recent handful of years, what does that look like schedule-wise, record-wise, for the Auburn Tigers?
Well, I mean, I've said this. I mean, like, I would, like, take bias aside. If you're an Auburn fan, like, take a step outside the box. I think if Auburn goes 6-6 this year, but the offense looks more competent, defense is pretty solid, they just lose some tough games on the road and against better opponents, I think that's arrow pointed upward. Now, again, nobody's going to get excited about 6-6,
sure,
even though Hugh Freeze told us. I mean, the whole goal is to make a bowl game, right? But, you know, I think I would probably say 7-5 is more likely, and I think that's good. I think that's a big step forward. I think that's showing signs of life. Auburn fans I've talked to said, we just want to see a competent offense. Like, that's all we want to see. Like, we want to see touchdowns scored, and, hey, if we lose games, you know, 31-27, so be it. But at least we're in those games, and we're enjoyable to watch. Like, Auburn fans I talked to last year were like, we weren't even fun to watch.
No.
Like, we look forward to the games, and then, like, there's this crap offense out there. It's like, great, we're losing all these one possession games, but it didn't feel like we were that close. So I think that's what you just want to see, and I think Alex Scholes will bring it. Now, I think a big part of this is, you know, the health of Byron Brown. Can he stay healthy playing a 9-game SEC schedule, taking hits and that sort of thing? If he misses any time, that could certainly skew the schedule as well. But I mean, 7-5 is kind of where I'm putting Auburn right now. And like I said, I think that's a step forward. Now, look, you win a tough game or two at Jordan-Hare with the home field advantage, maybe it's 8-4. And then I think people are throwing a parade there going, man, the arrow's pointed upward with a potential top 15, top 10 recruiting class coming in next year. Like, I think you're really cooking with fish grease there if you're Auburn next year. So, again, I think this is kind of a can't-lose year for Alex Golish. I just, you know, if everybody's being realistic with expectations, I don't think anybody's expecting Auburn to go 10-2 and make the playoff. But
yeah.
It's not without the outside the realm of possibility.
Sure, and all you're saying is there's a chance, and you're firing people up here on this rainy Thursday afternoon by saying you could take 7-5, you could take 8-4. I think If you offered 7-5, I'd say the majority of Auburn fans would take that and run. If you said 8-4, I don't think there would be but 1 or 2% that even asked a follow-up question rather than taking that to the bank. And we're going to be able to get a little bit more knowledge on this team as well as all the other teams in the SEC. As you make your way, we make our way down to Tampa in, gosh, a week and a half, which feels like that doesn't even make any sense whatsoever. But we will all be down there in SEC Media Day. Down in Tampa, Florida, and this week has been discussed a lot about what we expect to see, what we expect to hear, and the winners and the losers of Media Days. Are you in the boat that I'm in terms of the winners and losers of SEC Media Day is a little bit overhyped because everybody's at the point now of, get in, say what you need to say, don't make a fool of yourself, and you feel like with social media now, I mean, you have the fear of saying anything that you don't need to just because they're going to take it and run.
Yeah, and I hate it because I think we need more Steve Spurriers. I think we need more people to speak their mind and give their opinion. Look, Steve Sarkisian saying, you know, taking basket weaving classes at Ole Miss, and, you know, Lane Kiffin saying, yeah, some family said, you know, it was a little racist there in Oxford. Like, I want that. I want the controversial stuff. We need that. Everybody getting up there at a podium and just speaking in cliches. I think it's just, it's boring for everybody. I mean, there's been those moments the last few years at Media Days where I'm like, why are we even doing this? Yeah. Like, you know, we can, if the coaches just want to speak in cliches, we can just send some quotes through via email, and, like, we don't have to do all this. So I wish we'd get more of that. It seems like Eli Drinkwitz has kind of been a little bit more of that lately. Like, he seems to be a guy that will voice his opinion and let it fly. So I hope we get some of that. I'm sure Kiffin and Sark being on the last day this year might say something controversial at the podium. So, look, we need that for college sports. We need stuff like that that'll grab attention. But the big thing that I think we underrate with Media Days, though, guys, is what's the big thing that comes out of Media Days every year? So we all vote. The media collectively votes for, you know, the order of finish for the SEC, who they think will win the SEC, but also the first team and second team, you know, all SEC teams. Mm-hmm. And it has a big bearing on who comes to SEC Media Days. And that's why it's so interesting. We're a week and a half out. We still don't know who's attending from which schools. But there is a strategic thing around this. Like, I remember a few years ago, South Carolina brought their punter, Kai Kroger. Guess what? First team All-SEC punter was Kai Kroger. They strategically do this to bring guys that are not only good, that will represent their university and typically speak well, but also they're looking to strategically kind of, trick the media into voting for these guys on the all-SEC teams. So that's what I think will be very interesting to see who all these schools bring. You know, for Auburn, it's like, man, any of the newcomers from USF are fair game. Do you bring Jeremiah Cobb? I would consider that, but, you know, it would be a shame if Byron Brown doesn't go. So it'll be really interesting how they strategically do this.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. And Chris, the Southeastern Conference has undergone such a change at the head coaching rank over the past year, with multiple new head coaches for their first time down in Tampa for SEC Media Days. Guys, not only like Alex Golish, but John Summerall, Ryan Silverfield, Will Stein, Pete Golding. Which new head coach are you most interested in hearing from at the podium?
Well, it's John Summerall. I mean, he is that guy is just like you hear him talk, and I'm like, I want to play for that guy. And it sucks for Auburn fans because, you know, he was right down the road at Troy, and there were rumblings that they were interested in him, and he ends up going to Florida. But I like Summerall a lot, and I think that's why a lot of folks in the media are voting, you know, saying Florida could have a chance this year. Florida's got an outside chance of going 10-2 and making the playoff. They do have a loaded roster. I mean, Jaden Bart, running back, a really talented wide receiver room. Defense is pretty good up front. So, I mean, they've got pieces, but they got to figure out the quarterback thing. But, you know, as far as the new coaches, like, John Summerall, I really want to hear from. Will Stein at Kentucky, man. That guy's like, what is he, like 36 years old? Like, this dude is, and he's living out his dream job. Like, his family grew up big Wildcats fans his whole life. And he ended up going to Louisville because he didn't get a scholarship offer from Kentucky. But, like, it's that guy's like the ultimate wild card this year. I don't know what we're going to get from Kentucky. So, you know, those are interesting. And then all your other ones, you know, Ryan Silverfield, no offense against him, I just think is a little bit of a bore at Arkansas. Golish, I think, you know, he's had a couple of nice quotes this offseason. I'm curious if he'll say something that'll captivate people. But, yeah, just in terms of the newer coaches, I think, like, if we're guessing, like, who's going to be the media darling coming out of this, I think it's going to be John Summerall at Florida, because the guy just, he's that old school, I don't want to say meathead mentality, but, like, he's a little bit of that, man. Like, they were hitting in spring practice, and people were like, whoa, what are we doing here? And he's like, man, we got to toughen up.
Chris, another person that'll be taking the podium that every single person in attendance will want to hear is Greg Sankey, the Southeastern Conference Commissioner, especially with the Save College Sports Act drama going on in Washington. What do you expect him to get up there onto the podium and talk about in terms of that, as well as any other changes through college athletics?
Yeah, I'm always curious with Sankey, because sometimes he'll hit you with a wild card. Like, a lot of times, like right now, I'm fully expecting he will talk in code. He'll talk in, yeah, we're still working things out, we're not committed to anything. But every now and then he'll hit you with a pretty, you know, hot take on something. You go, whoa, okay. You know, so, like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Sankey comes out and says something about, you know, the SEC will not conform. We will not accept these terms for the Protect College Sports Act. And, you know, we've seen some of the schools come out this week releasing statements saying, yeah, we're not on board with the act in its current form. So, and the two big things really are, one, you want to protect your advantage of being able to, you know, work your own media rights deal. That this whole deal about pooling media rights, I feel like I need to mention this all the time. Hopefully you guys read this, but Cody Campbell, the big scoundrel down at Texas Tech that's a rich billionaire, has got all his money, he has a stake in a media rights company. That's why he keeps pushing for, yeah, we should pool all our media rights together. And, you know, just everybody's under the same umbrella. And, oh, by the way, I've got a company that I'm invested in that will take those media rights and will schedule games on TV. Like, of course you will. Like, you just want to get richer with this whole thing. So hopefully, you know, again, the SEC stands their ground on that, says, look, we're not gonna pool media rights. Also, we're not going to sacrifice our potential of future expansion. That's another part of it, that they're, you know, trying to handcuff the big conferences. Oh, we don't want to create super conferences. Well, okay, we don't either, but, like, at least we're going to leave the option on the table. Don't take that away from us. So we'll be really curious to see what Greg Sankey has to say on all that stuff. And then also just everything from, you know, enforcement. Like, we're trying to kind of police a little bit more here when it comes to NIL and stuff like that. So it's a weird time because, like, we want freedom, we want players to be paid, we want all this, but we also want to kind of rein in some of the stuff where it's not the Wild Wild West out here with every rule.
And maybe if we just released, like, a 21-minute video about rights pulling or about nine-game schedules, maybe then we'll get what we want, and the media can just take that and run with it, like Texas Tech.
Yeah, there has never been a 21-minute video of four men in a room talking on one topic that I've enjoyed ever in my life. So, although I'm glad Texas Tech didn't take that video down, I'm glad it's still out there so we can look back on it years from now and go, what a bunch of buffoons that was. Look, I like Joey McGuire a lot. Like, I think he's a good head coach, and they had a hell of a season last year. But, man, did he lose all goodwill with the dumbassery of defending Brendan Sorsby and his quote-unquote addiction problem. Like, We had a guest on the show a few weeks ago who deals with addiction recovery and said, yeah, I'm sorry, that's an absolute joke that Brendan Sorsby had. He goes, unless you were he was living in his car and had $0 in his bank account, don't come to me and tell me about addiction problem. Come on.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. And Chris, the MLB draft coming shortly. What are some names out of some big-time SEC teams that could be picked high in the MLB draft?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of those middle infielder guys. You know, it's funny, Dana Brown from GM of the Astros, who I talk with every now and then, he was telling me how much they love, according to him, he said, interior, what do you call it, like a middle infield SEC guys. And so there's a lot of different guys that fall under that category. Obviously, Justin LeBron at Alabama, I think he's going to be one of those guys who's going to hear his name called. You know, and then you talk about on the corners, you got Ace Reese at Mississippi State. Pitching-wise, Liam Peterson from Florida, I think, is going to go high. But, you know, Justin LeBron, shortstop for Alabama, Tyler Bell, shortstop from Kentucky, they're going to hear their names called very early. And then, you know, kind of interested on some of the other ones. So you got Cade Townsend at Ole Miss. You got Tegan Coons at Tennessee. You got Hunter Dietz at Arkansas. Those are guys all kind of projected maybe back into the first round. So be curious to see where they go. Look, I love Daniel Jackson at Georgia. I'm curious where he will fall, maybe somewhere in the back end of the first, early second, somewhere in there. And then, you know, LSU has a couple of guys. Derek Curiel, who is projected, I think all the mock drafts kind of have him going 12th overall to the Angels. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, man, this is a year where I think, like, I'll put the over-under at probably 7 or 8 SEC names that are locks to go in the first round this year. It's going to be a lot of SEC talent gone.
That's crazy. And the idea that the Golden Spikes winner is not one of those solidified names just goes to show you how good SEC baseball is and how good it could become even more, again, with the proposed MLB draft rules and everything like that. But that's a story for another day. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us on ESPN 106.7. My man, we appreciate your time. Tell everybody what you got going on over on Locked On SEC over the next couple of weeks before we get to see you in Tampa.
Yeah, well, certainly we'll have a bunch of interviews there from SEC Media Days, but a really good episode up today with our buddy Brian Smith talking all things recruiting around the SEC. We did touch on Auburn a little bit on some of the guys they're in on. Big commitment announcement coming this Saturday from a safety, I think, from the Maryland area, but hearing that he's a Maryland lean, but Auburn is right there in his Final Four list, so we'll see what happens with him. But all that up there for you, Locked On SEC.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate your time. Looking forward to talking to you again next Thursday over the airwaves before we get you on here in a couple of weeks with the headset sitting right next to us.
Awesome, fellas. Yeah, I'll start putting on a tan for you guys.
Yeah, sounds great. Hey, get your voice ready for all the karaoke we got going on.
Yeah, we'll have to find some time to do that.
I think we can find some time to get Chris Gordy with a microphone in his hands. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, fellas.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, and you want to talk about a fantastic karaoke man. If you can't tell, just based off of the personality.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to see it.
It is Chris Gordy. Who is the I literally had it in my head the entire time. Who's the song, It Wasn't Me?
Huh?
The song,
Shaggy?
Yes.
Yeah, It Wasn't Me.
His Shaggy impersonation is fantastic.
Oh, I was already fired up for Tampa. I need to hear that now. Get him on karaoke. Get Doug on karaoke. I got to hear all of our people that we hear from just talking sports. I got to hear their vocal pipes for
sure.
It is
absolutely incredible. Definitely one that we won't want to miss. But we'll take our final break here on this Thursday afternoon. We'll come back and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. As always, if you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com. A really fun show here this afternoon, kind of off the rails. While we still have a moment to kind of complete the show, do you have another fact off the top of your mind that we can go to?
That I'm going to go with the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz was the movie production that they had an original. I don't know the person's name off the top of my head, but he was they had an original Tin Man. The one that was in the movie was not the original. And he got so sick because of the, like, silver paint they used to have his costume that he, like, was so sick they fired him in the hospital and brought in the new guy. Gosh. And so, yeah.
Wasn't the like the snow and everything?
It's asbestos.
Yeah. That they just thought was perfectly fine, and then the fact that they're all just sitting there running through it and everything.
Yeah, it's effectively the same thing of having the reason that the Roman Empire fell was probably because of the lead pipes, which the symbol for the periodic table for lead is PB, which is pubulus, like plumbing.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's why they called lead, because they made pipes out of it, and then the Roman Empire went crazy, and that's why it fell, because they were ingesting lead. I got a really good YouTube video for you about, like, that kind of, like, the asbestos stuff and the lead stuff. I got a good one for you.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
You're going to just play College Football 27 and support EA and their greedy business practices, right?
Yes. I'm actually a 99 overall, and I'm already a level 100 coach, so I don't know how. Just grinding a lot right now.
Oh, yeah.
No worries whatsoever. So tomorrow, just Free For All Friday, going to be the exact same show. We're just going to sit here and list off the strangest facts ever, and by that, I mean Trip, and I'll sit here and I will laugh because the Wizard of Oz used to scare the crap out of me.
Really?
I don't know.
I was scared of the tractor and cars, like when they would go cow tipping, the bull tractor.
Sure.
That used to terrify me when I was a kid.
I don't doubt that. I can see that. Well, we'll talk some more fears tomorrow afternoon, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Sports are so much better with an opinion. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.